Hey everyone.
Welcome to Redefining ABCD. Today's episode will be another Brown Art Network episode where we'll highlight specific South Asian voices in a variety of professions within the creative community. We'll hear about their creative work, how they navigated themselves through their chosen industry, and any tips they might have for other individuals in the South Asian community looking to pursue a similar career in the arts.
So today we'll be talking to Thara Ashraf, who is the creator of In Between American, which is a blog dedicated to talking about the various ups and downs of being in a hyphenated identity. So hi, Thara, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
So just to start us off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I live in Buffalo, New York, and I started this blog about a while ago now, and I just wanted to have a way to share the experience that I had. So one of the things that I noticed in your work, as well as what we've talked about before, is that all of us have felt like we are the only ones that are living our story. And that's so unfortunate, that's so sad, but it also means that we get to take control of that narrative in a way that we haven't been able to until now, which is kind of exciting.
What motivated you to start In Between American, and, you know, when did it start? How did it start? Was there a very specific moment in your life when you were like, okay, this makes sense to kind of share with the, you know, just general public?
So my parents were actually the ones that encouraged me to begin the blog, and they encouraged me to begin it because they said that I couldn't be the only one feeling this way. There must be other people out there that are also feeling this way. And they said, maybe this is a way for you to get out some of that frustration, some of that, you know, not quite feeling like you check any boxes feeling by reaching out to other people and seeing if they are also feeling the same way. So it started a few years ago now. I want to say it's 10, but I think I'm just making up that number. And I just began it as a way to kind of take that story and make it into sharing my experience and not having us as Desi Americans being the only one. This way it was a way to reach out to other only ones.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think when you said like your parents encouraged you, I think that's also very like cool. Like your parents like acknowledge that you're kind of in this in-between phase because you're not really from South Asia or you're not really from America. So it's really cool that they acknowledged that and like supported you in your creation to start this.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that I feel very fortunate with that. I know we'll get into it later, but I think that can be a struggle for many of us to feel like we're not from this place, we're not from that place. And the interesting thing is, the more that I've talked to other people that are children of immigrants or grandchildren of immigrants, they feel that same experience. And it's not until like putting all those pieces together did I realize that, oh, yeah, everyone is kind of feeling this way and maybe we should do something about it rather than just hiding it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times with that, though, like when you're trying to figure out who you are, sometimes I see this like also a lot in like South Asian Facebook groups and stuff, where like they would pin their like they're like they'll blame their parents or like they'll say like this is all because of my parents that I'm like this, and like I feel like I did do that when I was younger as well, but like I think it needs to come to realize like they're also trying to figure it out in this new country as well, like not only us, but I think that's awesome that your parents kind of realized that and supported you.
Well, like how many of us have had we didn't have to ship ourselves across the world
exactly
in order to create a whole new life for ourselves. And yeah, I think I do see that a lot with South Asian groups, that it's we're going to do it as a blame thing rather than, and I don't think there are certain things that I want to change with my relationships moving forward, of course, but I think that happens with every generation. But I think if we only blame, we don't get to see the fact that they were probably our age when they came here or younger. And they had to go through horrific trauma, hardship, heartbreak to do this. So, like, what are we complaining about? It's kind of like Hasan Minhaj said, like, every birthday present, you're welcome. I brought you to America.
Yeah.
Like, but I think that's true, right?
Yeah.
They did a lot.
I totally agree.
They did a lot. And honestly, yeah, they were, like, basically thrown into parenthood at such a young age and, like, with no really, like, I guess, like, I don't know, like, no one really warms them up to the idea. They just kind of come here and they're like, okay, well, all right, cool. Let's just do it. Sure. And it's, like, very, like, I don't know, like, it's very, like, I get where they come from. And it, some, yeah, and you're right, Kirti, they do, like, there's so many people in our community that love to, like, blame our parents and, like, I don't know, Indian, like, immigrant parents in general, and there's a lot of that, like, in our community. And to some extent, they can be right, but in other times, it's like, I feel like you can't just always blame your parents for stuff, because at the end of the day, they love you, and they did care for you, and put a roof over your head, and do all these things when, you know, all odds were against them, so... You know, it's fine. Sometimes you, at the end of the day, you just have to forgive them and realize that, you know, they're great.
And they're human too, yeah. Right? They had to do all this as humans alone, totally separate. Totally. And you're both in school, so you understand that too, that when you look around and you see, I'm taking classes as well, when you look around and you see other students in the classroom, you're like, how? How did you think that that was expected? But we don't expect it. And I think that's what makes us kind of stand apart from mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I guess kind of going into it, going off of that a little bit, since our podcast focuses heavily on discussing the ups and downs of being hyphenated identities, we like to ask our guests, you know, like growing up, how did you feel about embracing your South Asian American identity? And what does it mean to be South Asian American to you?
So growing up was tough. So I am Pakistani American and I am a Muslim as well. And I have always identified as Muslim. And I was in seventh grade when 9/11 happened and people were just mean. Like I remember, you know, I shared with you too that people in Buffalo were very friendly. Well, when I first moved here, I moved here well before 9/11. I moved here, I was almost 8. And I'll never forget our first winter here. We were leaving sledding, right? We were leaving, going sledding for the first time. And somebody cut off my dad. And my opa was like, you know, hands on the wheel, like brown guy behind the wheel, right? And the guy was like, go back to where you came from. And I was like, and that was the first time it registered in my head. Oh, people don't want us here. And it just kept going and going and going. So like, kids were mean, they'd have birthday parties and invite everybody but me, or they would say, oh, you can't come because you're going to bring something weird or you're going to do this that's weird. And then 9/11 happened and I was in seventh grade and it just like, they were already like, it was already brewing and then it just shot, you know, through the roof really, really bad. So I had some friends through my masjid. I had some family friends through the Pakistani community, through the Desi community. Some of them are Indian as well, and Kashmiri as well. So, you know, I had those friends, but I never, until I went to college, which was also very white, I never realized how much I needed it. So that was when I fully started to embrace the South Asian part of my heritage, because before that, I didn't even correct people when they would say my name wrong. Like, I just be like, it's fine, whatever, it's fine. But that's part of us, right? And that's part of where we come from. And it was that like took me to realize, oh, I need that in my life. So now I seek it out, you know, I wear like churia every day. Like, I'm just like, you know what, this is who I am. This is where I come from. And it's taken a lot to get there and a lot of, you know, hard moments, but I think it's been really like, I like having that part of me now. Mm-hmm. How do you guys feel about it? Because you're younger than I am. So I also asked that, like, was it the same feeling or did it morph over time? How did that happen?
I think, I mean, you were put in a really like unfortunate situation. So I can't imagine like what you went through when like 9/11 happened and then like people who are like uneducated decided to give you their opinion.
Their education.
Like, I mean, in terms of like cultural knowledge and whatnot and religion and stuff like that, I didn't mean like uneducated, like don't know anything about the books, but
oh no.
But I mean, like,
I didn't take it.
But I like, I guess for like Sneha and I, we both grew up in a place where the majority was actually Asian and the minority was white. So we were grown up in like a Desi community. So it felt like it was, because like all the ideals that our parents brought is what was enforced in us, and there was many of us, so it kind of felt like a Desi community in that sense. So I guess growing up, we were just like growing up, it was just like a habit. Like we would go to Tamil school on Saturdays, and then we would go to like Hindu school on Sundays, like I did. So, or like, and I also did like Bharatanatyam dancing, like on my like free time too. So like, I guess I was just, it was already from the start, I was really ingrained into like various aspects of our like culture. So I guess it didn't really like, I didn't realize like how much it influenced my identity until I grew up and like came to college, and I saw like majority of the people in engineering are like really white rednecks. So I didn't realize how like Indian I guess I was until I came here, and they started asking me like various like strange questions because I like one of the first person of color they've ever seen and stuff like that. So I mean, like for me, it just, I guess it's kind of like a, it came from like a self-confidence aspect where I was like, I like wanted to grow more comfortable in my own skin, was like kind of how it evolved for me. But I don't know.
So like Kirti said, we kind of were like, I guess, privileged in that way that we kind of grew very closely with other Indian Americans in our age group, as well as like our language. Like there were so many people who were Tamil who live in where we were, and we had Tamil school, we had like GCTS, like functions, like, you know, Diwali functions that people would put together, and like dance showcases and stuff. So we were very privileged in that way that we like got to be surrounded by all these things. But I think when you're in the middle of that, you kind of don't really understand the privilege that you have until you leave, and I think that's definitely the case, at least for me. Like I kind of took it for granted, I think. And then I came to college, and like again, like Kirti said, like majority of like the people in my like architecture studios and all that, all those, there's like maybe like 12 POC among like 120 of us. So like that's when it really hit me. I was like, wow, I am really like in over my head. Like I don't know how to not talk like an Indian, if that makes any sense. Like, you know, like I can't, it's very difficult. It's a very difficult way of like holding yourself, I think, in when it comes to non-Indian people. Like I feel like the priorities kind of shift in conversation. Like I feel like you're more like, I guess the biggest difference I found in studio was that I found myself like having to explain, like try to prove my individuality and like be like, oh yeah, this is what I want to do with my life and I have it all figured out. Whereas like not even that, it's just like you like, what's your favorites, like what do you like, what do you dislike, like all these things like I never really considered because I was just part of this kind of group think kind of atmosphere for the longest time. So like there was kind of a period where I was kind of like almost like observing and like watching other people and like trying to figure out like, okay, this is how you act with non-Indian people. Interesting. It's like reverse culture shock almost, which is very interesting. I don't know. It's very interesting. So I don't know. But now I'm kind of coming to terms with like my Indian side because there was a bit where I wasn't, you know, kind of distanced myself. Now I'm like at a point where I'm coming back to it with this blog or with this podcast and everything else. So I don't know, long-winded explanation. I'm sorry. Totally off topic.
No, but I think You both make the same point that growing up within it, you don't see it for what it is until you leave it. Right. But then when we leave it, we have to, like you said, Sneha and Kirti, you said this, both of you said it, that you have to carry yourself differently. You have to talk differently. I have a group of friends that are all women of color. And it's so funny when we get together, like, I don't have to explain how shit happened. I'm trying really hard not to swear because I don't know who's going to listen to this podcast. But, like, I don't have to explain it, right? Like, when you guys say, oh, I have Tamil school and then I have Hindu school, I'm like, yeah, okay, makes sense. Whereas people would be like, you gave up your whole weekend to, like, do cultural things? Like, yeah, that's what we do, right? And it's a very different mindset. I'm learning more and more as I see different people. I'm like, oh, you didn't grow up like this.
Out of curiosity, what's that show that Mindy Kaling put out, like, Never Have I Ever. Yeah. What is your opinion about that show? Because it does talk about the identity of being Indian American.
So I haven't watched it. In my personal life, I'm also grieving a lot of personal losses, and I know that the show deals a lot with that. So one of my friends called me and was like, this is probably not the time for you to watch this. So I was like, okay. So all of what I've noticed is several white people recommended it to me, and I was like, I lived that. Like, I don't need to show a show to tell me how I lived. Like, I have lived all of that. But only one Desi person recommended it to me. So I was like, oh, that's interesting.
That is interesting.
That one of us recommended it. Everyone else was like, you should watch this. It's a novel idea. But I have heard that it's a very particular view of it. And because I know she also dealt with loss in her own life, this is her way of trying to deal with it, I guess. I think that's good for her that she's able to do that, but I don't think I could watch it right now. It's hard enough to watch like random TV shows and movies where they bring it up. So
That's fair. Sorry to like dive out of topic, but to kind of go more into like kind of, I guess, change gears and go into like the career specific. For your blog, you have a really like interesting like writing style, and so I wanted to ask, like, how did you develop that style, and has the content that you're discussing, like issues of identity and culture, influenced your writing style at all?
So my writing style has pretty much always been the same, to be honest. I remember when I was younger, I had a teacher that always get mad at me because she'd be like, you're not answering the question in just like a straightforward way. You always have to put it in some kind of language. And I was like, that's how I write. That's how I talk. That's so that has not really changed or evolved, but I think you're right. I think really trying to dive into the identity part of it has influenced the blog a lot and its writing style. So what I've tried to do is, because I know that's my style of writing, really try to focus on certain aspects rather than one of my favorite bosses I ever had told me, it's better to be specific in your writing than try to apply to everybody. And you two do that beautifully in your podcast and in the work that you do. You really do. I mean, talk about being specific. You have been so specific and so niche and so clear that these are the stories you want to uplift and talk about and bring to the world, and that's amazing to see. So you've done that. I mean, I can't even tell you how to do it because you've done it already yourself, but that's not something I knew how to do inherently, so that was something I had to learn how to do.
Well, thank you. That was good to hear from our guests. Yeah. I mean, thank you. I never really thought, I mean, we just started it and now we're here and I don't know how we got here, so that's fine.
But you don't have to know. No, it worked.
You're right. Fake it till you make it. You know, it actually works sometimes. But yeah, no, that's cool that your writing style, like I really appreciate, it's very poetic and almost like couplets, like, which because I was reading through, it's just nice. It's very to the point and I appreciate it a lot. So no, it was good. I don't know, I guess moving ahead, I feel like a big part of like entering the world of blogging is becoming good at marketing, you know, not only your blog, but also yourself as like, I guess, a persona almost, like as a communication professional as well. Do you have any like tips for our listeners about, you know, putting yourselves out there in terms of business or even blogging or design, art, anything of that nature?
I have a really good book that's on my shelf that I could show you the name of. So this is the book that I read in college. It's called Career Distinction. And again, one of my favorite professors told us that we should look at it. That was like right when branding became a thing. People had just started like branding themselves and their businesses. So to go back to what my boss had said as well, combined with this book, it's better to be specific than try to talk to all people. So what I would suggest is, and it's so much easier said than done, but think of the person that you want to be your audience member and then create something for that audience member if that's something you feel capable of. For example, I am a person that's currently grieving, right? I shared that. So I know that I can talk very specifically and very much in depth about the loss that I feel, the way that it's affected my life, the way it's affected my family, shaped all of my relationships, right? But 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to say that. I would have been able to say it only a little bit because I had experienced some pretty big ones, but not as big as this one. So one of the things that my boss suggested I do is create a your ideal audience member and then talk to that person. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And so I spent a lot of time on Pinterest and a lot of time on Instagram trying to figure out what that meant. And for me, my in-between audience is anybody who's child of immigrants, children of immigrants, grandchildren of immigrants, or just anybody that has never felt like they really had a box to tick when it came to like the census, right? We all know which ones we tick and which ones we don't. But why is that? Why do we feel that hesitation still? And that was where I went from there. So it's young people, it's young professionals, because I've not been in the workforce for a gazillion years. So like find a specific audience member and then create your content that audience member would like, if you can do that. But you don't have to feel forced into doing that either. And again, that's something that the two of you have done very well, that you have found your audience and said, okay, this is who we're going to talk to. We're only going to talk to these people. We can have other people that want to share with us and we'll learn from them, but we don't have to include it in the same way.
Yeah, that's really important, is to like acknowledge your audience, because at the end of the day, they're reading your content and like taking in what you're writing. So that's really interesting. How do you, how do you balance like addressing your audience, but also like adding your personal like touch or experience to it so they can continue to connect with your work?
So to be honest, I think the best thing to do is just write it as if you're writing it for yourself and then try to connect it to your audience. The pieces that I've written that I think have been the most poignant for people or the most interesting for people have been the ones that I've written when I've been angry about something or sad about something. When Trump got elected, I like fired off a gazillion things about all of that and like my response to it, right? So that was very much my particular response to it, but it resonated for a lot of people because a lot of people either felt the same way that I did or hadn't thought about the feelings, those feelings.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess in terms of like your blog In Between American, how do you choose or pick that? I know you say you go with what you're like, you're feeling and stuff like that, but like, how do you choose what you talk about or like what topics you want to put on your platform?
It's a good question. Some of it has been driven by what's happening around us. So for example, with the Never Have I Ever show, that was one that I thought I would write about and just didn't because I never watched the show. And then a lot of it has just been in response to the things that are happening either on the news or happening in my personal life that I just want to explore in a different way. Does that make sense? I don't know if that's a good answer or not.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I don't know really much about like what like a career in communications or like in media and stuff. So like, can you like kind of like go through like what your day to day kind of looks like, I guess, as that profession?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So I have only held a few jobs in communication specific roles because, you know, as you'll both see when you apply to 500 places and you get like 5 interviews back, that's the norm. Right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but that is the norm. And that's what happened for me. That's what happened for my Abu. It happens all the time. So a lot of what I've done is I've always sought out roles that will get me towards the communications line. So if I am doing a communications role, a lot of what I'll do is look at what's going on in the news or what's going on in the themes of the news. So for example, when Obamacare was released, how are different people talking about it? How can I talk about it from a neutral perspective? How can I talk about it from one of the sides, whether I'm for or against? And then what is it going to take to move forward? So my most recent role as a communications associate was creating social media for a nonprofit. So it was creating their Instagram presence, their Facebook presence, all of that. So looking at what different trends are. So that was about the time that like video, everyone suddenly realized that video was a good way to get people to look at Instagrams and Facebooks. So instead of just putting videos on that were about that particular nonprofit's work, we also tried to make it creative. So they gave out grants to different organizations. So we'd show videos of people using those grants in the community, or if they came in for a workshop, different photos of them after the workshop, laughing, having a good time, whatever. But just trying to show things in a different way. So I think the first thing is see what is going on in the news, see what the themes are of the news, and then see how that supports your organization. So that organization was very much not political. So anything that I said, it would have to be very neutral. And I've never had a place where it's been one way or another. So just like figuring out how do you keep that neutral tone, but keeping in line with what's going on in the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. That's really interesting.
I guess kind of leading off of that, I know, so I was reading your bio and stuff, and it was saying how like, you know, you've lived in so many different places around the world or traveled to so many different places. What's your like craziest or favorite experience you've had in that travel kind of journey so far, either with In Between American or, you know, traveling?
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I've loved everywhere that I've been so far in the world, which is an amazing privilege. I know that. So there are two really big places that stand out in my mind. A few years ago, again, 10 years ago, probably at this point, we went to Turkey as a family and we got to see like the Hagia Sophia. We got to see different pieces that had belonged to certain prophets. And I was like, oh my God, they were real people. This is so cool. Right? Because you hear these stories forever. But when you actually see something that celebrates that and is that, it's a whole, you know, I just remember standing there crying, like looking at this stuff. I studied abroad in Spain. So I loved going to Spain as well. That was another place that really celebrated the Muslim heritage, but also has a really complicated history with religion. And then I guess the most recent trip that I've done that I've loved was that right after 2016 happened, I got married in 2016, and then we moved down to South America, to Colombia, and then we lived there for 6 months. And I loved that. And I still call the people there my family. Like, they're good people. We still talk every few days. But I think everywhere that I've been, my parents taught me, I don't know if you two had this experience, but I remember the first time, I don't remember this, but I've seen pictures. First time I was on a plane, I was 6 months old going to Pakistan to meet my family. And so I always had this appreciation for seeing what was around me and knowing that's not it in the world, right? Like a lot of people grow up in the same place, stay in the same place, don't travel. And I think when you grow up seeing that, you realize, oh, we're really lucky and we're really, really privileged to be here.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that comes with like any sort of traveling. Like, I guess like, I think it really does take like traveling places, at least from a young age too, to really understand that the world is a lot bigger than you think, which, you can't really get if you're kind of stuck in one location, it's a whole nother experience. And I really appreciate that that's like such a big part of your life. Cause I do want that, like personally speaking, I'd love that to be kind of integrated with my life at some point. So I don't know, like the whole traveling aspect is really cool.
I mean, I feel like with your line of work, you should definitely travel, and you can say it's work related.
No, I agree. There's so many buildings to look at. I'm so excited to see all of them.
I guess kind of come to a conclusion for this episode, like beyond this pandemic and kind of your like the current situation of what's going on with the world right now, I guess, what do you see yourself like doing in the future? Like, what are some goals that you have set for yourself to kind of look forward to for like the next couple of years, I guess.
I'd really like to go back to Colombia or go to Pakistan and do something there. I'm really interested in health and health communications and creating better systems around that, better education around that, because I think those countries in particular, but obviously all around the world, we really have a need for better healthcare and better just taking care of people better. So that's like my biggest goal, is to help people around the world get healthier, get better. And then smaller goals, just I like to work out a lot, so I constantly set myself new workout goals. And I'd love to be a Zumba instructor.
Oh, that's awesome. Someday,
'cause that's like, I love it. Yeah. When we were in Colombia, I did a Zumba contest and I won, and they were all like, this is amazing, this is a sign. And I was like, it's not a sign. It's just that I'm the most ridiculous. But I think just seeing what we can do, even in small ways, like I love to volunteer on my community. What can we do to make this world a better place, even if it's incremental, right? Even if it's small little things. A few months ago, I began a donation circle with a few friends of mine, and we talk about the causes that we're interested in, where we want to get back to, all that sort of thing. And it's been amazing to see how much in a short amount of time we've been able to do. We've been able to see really cool organizations, get involved with really cool organizations in a way that I don't think any of us really anticipated. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. It must be very rewarding too, just to see like all the fruits of your efforts.
To wrap up this segment, do you have any last words or advice for anyone trying to find their voice or writing style? I know we kind of discussed it earlier, but any last thoughts about putting yourself out there, trying to find your voice, all that jazz?
I guess the first thing is put yourself out there, and don't be afraid to put yourself out there, because I think, so Randy Pausch, I don't know if either of you have ever seen his video. One of the things that he said that always stuck with me was that people will surprise you, and that can be really good, that can be really bad, right? We all know the really bad experiences, but quite often people do surprise you. Some of the people that I never thought I'd be that close to in my life have become some of the closest ones. And some of the people that I thought would be there forever aren't. And I think it's good to know that, and it's good to keep that in mind when you put yourself out there, that, yeah, you might have doors slammed in your face. You might have people look at you like you're crazy. You might have people who just can't understand what your experience is, especially as Desi Americans, right? Yes, there are so many of us, but we're not everybody. Like you said, 10% of the program, right? But if we put ourselves out there, I think that's the biggest thing to move forward and to move ahead. And take the chance, right? Like, I moved to a country that I had never even visited, let alone traveled to, and I loved it. I had one of the best experiences of my life. But if I hadn't just applied for the program and just like on a whim applied for the program, I don't know that I would have done that. And look at what I would have missed out on, you know?
Right. No, that's amazing. And with that, with those final words, we will conclude this episode. Thanks, Tara, for coming on. This was really fun talking to you.
Thank you both so much. I really appreciate it.
We hope you guys enjoyed all the conversations we had today. Go check us out on Instagram at redefiningabcd, and feel free to let us know your thoughts on this episode. And as always, if you know anyone who'd be interested in being interviewed for a future Brown Art Network segment, either direct message us on Instagram or email us at redefiningabcd@gmail.com. And as always, stay safe and happy. We'll see you all in the next one.